Blog Talk Radio.
Everyone, happy new year. This is officially the first show of the 2015 season of the Feuersteins Fire American Soccer Show. I'm your host, Daniel Feuerstein. I'll give you an American perspective, our clubs, leagues, players, national team, and other fabulous moments. You can get your daily reading from me and other writers over at SoccerNewsDay.com and locally on the New York Red Bulls as well on FansFavorite.com. Episode number 222, The Deuces Are Wild. Chat room is open. Come on in. Discuss amongst yourselves if you like. If you have a question for me, I'll try to answer it to the best of my abilities. And my goodness, did New York soccer explode all of a week and a half ago? Once again, just the weirdest of things that have happened around here in New York City and within the New York City tri-state area with what happened with the Frank Lampard situation with New York City FC and the New York Red Bulls of dismissing after two successful seasons of Mike Petke. We'll get to the Mike Petke, or at least I'll get to the Mike Petke situation later on in the show, but I want to talk about, in my opening monologue, about New York City FC and the situation. You know, after having Dwayne Rollins and Carter Kirshner on, both men that are really Manchester City supporters, you know, you want to get it straight from their point of view, because the truth of the matter is this. And I understand how some people that have decided to root for this team in the Bronx at Yankee Stadium, because it's in the five boroughs. And in the past, and I've admitted that I am not in favor of this move, not because of the situation of the New York Red Bulls, but because of the situation of when are they going to get their own stadium. And even though it looked like it was a slam dunk when Mayor Bloomberg, Michael Bloomberg, was finishing up his term in office, his third term, which really is illegal in New York City these days, but it happened, which I think they should get rid of the term limits now and just have someone remain in office, but that's just my personal opinion. Bill de Blasio, who became the new mayor, nixed the deal because the city of New York was not going to get a sniff of a tax funds or taxes being earned into the coffers till a very, very long time, as they say, 2042, if that stadium was going to get built in that area. So a lot of question marks. But the big question mark is this. And really, it's not so much it's a question mark. The answer has come. And the truth is this. New York City FC is an affiliate of Manchester City. This is now officially Manchester City USA. You could say 2.0, I'll go 3.0. Because the truth of the matter is this. While I agreed that I would give them a chance, I agree, I would give them an opportunity to show themselves to not being an affiliate of Manchester City, the truth of the matter is it doesn't matter how you slice it. They may play in the five boroughs. They may play in the ballpark in the Bronx. They are not a New York City team. The jerseys are not New York City blue. The New York Yankees don't care about this team. And to my friends over in Manchester, the blue side of Manchester, I think we have to have some understanding here. And at the same time, I think we're going to have to throw a little baseball analogy at you, because since you are playing right now your first 3 years or more at the big ballpark in the Bronx. And regardless of the signing of Mick Discarude coming to play in the big ballpark in the Bronx, here's my little thing about balls and strikes. If the ball is not swung at and it's outside of the zone four times, the runner will go to first base on a free pass. But if the ball is pitched inside the zone above home plate, swung on and missed, strikes one, two, and three means you're out. You following me so far, Manchester City? My little baseball analogy for you. So when did all these strikes come? The jersey announcement. It's Manchester City Blue. Etihad Airways, of course, is the ownership group that becomes City Football Group. Manchester City Blue kits and Etihad Airways sponsors on the shirt. Strike one. What happened next after a great signing to bring over Frank Lampard to start the season in January, the shenanigans of that so-called MLS contract, which it was not an MLS contract, you committed fraud right off the bat. And right there and then, when did strike three happen? The silence. The silence after New Year's Eve and New Year's Day that lasted a good 4 to 5 days before Don Garber had to save NYCFC. At the same time, had to save the league. Now, he had to go to Grant Wall because Grant Wall, we'll be honest, Grant Wall does a fantastic job from Sports Illustrated and Fox Sports on covering Major League Soccer and American soccer in general. It does a very good job. So Don Garber goes to Grant and gives out his reasons. Oh, well, look, Frank's going to come in July during the summer window because it's not a loan deal. Mark Abbott, the deputy commissioner, also says it's not a loan deal. Don't understand why this was characterized as a loan deal. Guess what? You made us think it was a loan deal. And Frank Lampard is stuck in Manchester throughout the entire season. Strike three. Strike three. Guilt by association because of the commissioner and because of the league. So you see, strike one, Man City blue jerseys. Strike two, the falseness of Frank Lampard starting the MLS season in January. He's actually going to be heading to the Bronx in July to get ready for the August games. Strike three, guilt by association from the league. And this is why I was nervous about this. This is why I was concerned about this. Because of, yes, whatever's good for Manchester City, you're going to have to take it. You're going to have to take it, New York City fans, because once again, you are in a Major League Baseball stadium with a AAA team that will be representing Manchester City. Why do you think the Staten Island Yankees are in pinstripes? Because they are a part of the New York Yankee organization. Why do you think the Tampa Yankees are wearing pinstripes? Simple. They are an affiliate of the New York Yankees in the Florida State League in high A ball, class A. Scranton Wilkes-Barre in Pennsylvania, Trenton, New Jersey, Charleston, South Carolina have affiliation agreements. Affiliation agreements, because that means that the Yankee players can play there as they are going through the farm system. What is New York City FC AAA? What is Melbourne City FC AA? The top club will always be Manchester City. That's right. Manchester City. Dan, these new soccer fans that want to support this Manchester City USA team, excuse me, New York City FC team, were outraged. They wanted their season ticket money back. It's too late. You already gave them the money. They're not going to take it back. They're not going to give it back. You're stuck. But I understand your outrage. And the big question is this. The question is simple. If you feel like you want to go to the courts and you want to go get them, I mean, the real truth is this. I think you might have to go across the Atlantic and maybe file a petition, or at least file a civil suit in Manchester courts. Maybe you have to go to London to file these types of suits, these lawsuits, if you want. Because a great job by Brian Lewis of the New York Post. It was fraud that was committed by this club. Now, you know who else is hurt with all of this? And that is, of course, from within the club. I mean, the truth of the matter is Claudio Reyna was deceived by his own club, Manchester City. Jason Kreis, the head coach of this club, also was given a fraudulent tone. Because you know what? Those two got duped, just like every single fan of this club that's supposed to be under the moniker of New York City. You don't have your own stadium. Do you think the Yankees care? Do you think the Yankees really care? That's why they're 20%. They let you borrow the building. Do whatever you want. Leave them out of it. Where's Hank Steinbrenner in all this? I thought he was the soccer fan. I guess that's fraudulent as well. So, you know, when you have a situation like this, the league is in trouble. I think the league also has to bear the brunt of these shenanigans. I think Manchester City has to feel the full brunt of these shenanigans, because those are the two ends that basically fooled you, the paying customers, that basically you thought Frank Lampard was going to kick a ball in March. Instead, he's going to kick the ball in August. And it really, really hurts when you hear Commissioner Don Garber said, well, Thierry Henry and David Beckham all started in July. Frank will do the same thing. That's not what happened. That's not what happened here. What happened here was very simple. Major League Soccer look like fools again. You see, I love this league. I love this league a lot. And I do want to see it become a top five league in the world. But when you have Commissioner Don Garber running this league and with so many different rules, as he says, they make it up as they go along. That is why I cringe sometimes, because of the stupidity and the recklessness of how this league has been managed. That's why no one takes Major League Soccer seriously, and that is why you're always going to get these players, these great players from Europe, coming over here after the age of 30. And it's a shame, because it's a great league. I love it, you love it, and now this is not New York City FC. It's either Manchester City USA 3.0, because the league is also involved, with the shenanigans, or as I like to call it right now, because yes, they did commit fraud, even though it's unintentional. This is now Fraud City FC. It's not a real New York City team, and I'm sorry to say it. Great show for you tonight. My friends Earl Reed of the PhillySoccerPage.net will be joining me along with Robert Hay Jr. Of Robert Hay Jr. at WordPress.com, as well as World Soccer Talk, as we discuss interesting stories of 2015 and what that can be, including the CBA and what's been going on with New York as well. Chad Hollingsworth from Reckless Challenge will be joining me as well about the USL setup for 2015 in the USL Pro League. That's recorded, and also recorded, my first guest, once again, couldn't come on live. It's a Mr. Nathan Carr from the home of Caribbean Football at .wordpress.com, as we talk about the setup for CONCACAF for the 2018 World Cup qualifying. Nathan Carr, right now.
Feuerstein's Fire American Soccer Show, the first show of 2015. And join me right now as we take a look at World Cup qualifying for Russia in 2018 for the Confederation of CONCACAF. Joining me is Mr. Nathan Carr from the Caribbean Football website. If you want to go to see what is all about with Caribbean football, it is the home of caribbeanfootball.wordpress.com. Nathan, how are you? And thanks for being on the show.
Hello, Daniel. Hello, guys. Thanks very much for having me on.
No problem at all. So this is big here, obviously. As you found out through the Guyana Football Federation, that the whole setup for 2018 World Cup qualifying will be mostly goal aggregate qualifiers till you get back to the semifinal groups and then the hexagonal once again going into Russia.
Yeah, indeed. First three rounds, as you say, will be goal aggregate. And I think that really makes for more general fun and excitement. I think teams will have to go for it more. They have more to play for, as opposed to doing the group stage format, where I think the lesser nations, if you like, are more prone to being knocked out. The hex hasn't changed. I don't think that will ever change, really, as far as CONCACAF World Cup qualifying goes. That's always a tough climax. But, yeah, I'm interested to see how these two-legged playoffs work, and especially factor in the venues as well, and you know, if any issues will arise over that.
You know, that's the one thing I noticed from CONCACAF. It's always about the venues. I guess the state of the venues, how they're going to be looked at, because they want to see this competition. Of course, every cycle, these World Cup qualifying setups are always going to be tricky. I have to admit, I did like last year's with the first round being just those five goal aggregate matches, and then you go straight to six groups of, six groups of four in the quarterfinals, you might say. But, you know, I can understand why that they're going to go back to having all goal aggregate qualifiers up to now.
And if you look at it as well, I mean, at those two opening rounds, I mean, you've got 35 CONCACAF teams competing. And, you know, over 50%. Of the teams will be competing by the second round. So that already gets a lot of nations involved. And then on round three, you've got Jamaica and Haiti of Pot C coming into play. So I think all in all, that's a good move by CONCACAF, and I think it should be a success.
Talk about some of these nations, obviously. We already know Jamaica and Trinidad and Tobago are the big boys in the Caribbean, but you know, when you're seeing these Caribbean Cup tournaments, or at least when you keep up with them as much as you can, and you hope there's going to be a lot of video to watch, talk about some of these other nations. I mean, we know about some of these island nations like Puerto Rico, Dominican Republic. I mean, we talked about it before. They're mostly baseball heavy. Obviously, cricket is also a big time sport in the Caribbean as well. But, you know, some of these nations are kind of dangerous if you don't take them seriously.
I mean, as you mentioned, Jamaica and Trinidad and Tobago are traditionally the powerhouses in the region. Jamaica got to the hex as well last year, but didn't quite make the cut. In terms of other islands, in terms of actually looking at CONCACAF teams, I mean, over 30 of them are Caribbean based, so, you know, they do have a large influence. Suriname is definitely a team to keep an eye on. Recently, they've submitted, the Federation has submitted a bill to the country's government, basically asking if they can use and recruit players from the Dutch diaspora that are born in the Netherlands to Surinamese parents, so they can hold two passports simultaneously. So this would allow a lot of Dutch Surinamese professionals playing in the Netherlands and other leagues around the world to represent Suriname. Suriname recently played at a friendly on Boxing Day in Paramaribo, in the country's capital, and they lost out on penalties. But they, in theory, could have a really strong, talented team. And if this bill does go through in time for February next month, then that would be obviously very promising for the World Cup qualifying. Another team I think that deserves a mention is St Lucia. They've got some really talented youngsters coming through. Their under 17 team is going to be participating in the under 17 championships for CONCACAF, scheduled for next month. That's for the first time in the history. So there's clearly something going on there. The St Lucia are unlucky in the Caribbean Cup that was played last year. They didn't do as well as they would have liked to have done, but they played some good stuff. They just couldn't quite get the results. And then you've got, yeah, there's a lot of teams, St. Kitts and Nevis in Pot H, Antigua and Barbuda. They'll be a nation that a lot of US fans are familiar with the Antigua and Barracuda team in the USL Pro Division. They tried that experiment and failed. And then Cuba as well. They'll be at the CONCACAF Gold Cup. And for a team, you know, that for a country that's governed under such a strong political sort of communist system, Cuba are always actually constantly punching above their weight. The baseball is the major sport there, but football is growing rapidly in popularity. And, you know, we've seen evidence of their progress not only in the Caribbean Cup, but also in the Gold Cup as well. They participate in the 2013 edition. So I think those islands are ones to keep an eye out, especially Suriname, if that that bill goes through, which could be monumental.
Absolutely, and I really believe that a country like Cuba has shown to be a very, very tough nation to face because, look, we understand we don't know what's going on in the U.S. when you talk about the Cuban national team, whether it's for baseball or for football, but they always find a way to play very, very tough, and usually the Vegas odds are out about defections, but that's just another joke, but anyway. But other than that, you know, it's going to be interesting round one. These teams in Pot H and Pot I will face each other first, and then they'll advance into the second round with those in Pots F and G, as well as Pot D, E, F, and G, and Pot D, which will only be Canada, which, all right, that's one pot too many, I think, but that, you know, we'll see what happens there. But still, that's how they separate it. So it should be interesting to see what's going to happen in the first round because, obviously, we'll find out what's going to happen when the bigger and the more higher-ranked teams will be in round two facing against these winners in round one. Other than that, if I can ask it, why did Curaçao change away from Netherlands and Antilles? They just want to have their own identity?
Yeah, I think so. They changed in 2010 and instantly were granted FIFA and indeed CONCACAF membership. They were initially Netherlands and Antilles, and I suppose it was, as you say, it was just a case of wanting to have their own football identity, wanting to have their own players, and they've recruited quite a lot from the Dutch diaspora. There's quite a few players born in the Netherlands to Curaçao and heritage. They didn't do very well in the Caribbean Cup, but they're a team that could spring a surprise. Don't seem to have much cohesion at the moment, but obviously that will come and that will develop with games, with game time. So, yeah, I think they've done okay since making that switch for 4 years ago now, or five.
Yeah, absolutely. Here's my question for you, and obviously, you know, we know about certain nations that are a part of confederations, but they're not part of FIFA. like, I'll say Bonnerie, I guess, if I pronounce it correctly. Bonnerie.
Bonaire.
Pardon?
Bonaire.
Bonaire. Bonaire, thank you very much. I mean, what is their designation, and why haven't some of these... I mean, it's interesting to see you have a couple of islands that are like Guadeloupe, for example, under French law, but they're not part of CONCACAF. It's just interesting to find out about that sort of stuff.
Yeah, well, with Martinique, Guadeloupe, and French Guiana, those three are French overseas departments, which basically means they're islands in the Caribbean region which are controlled by France, and this dates back to the colonization when the French came over to the Caribbean and obviously instilled their culture and, you know, had a large influence on these islands. And that means that they can't be granted FIFA membership due to FIFA rules. So they are allowed to participate in the CONCACAF-sanctioned competitions like the Gold Cup and indeed the Caribbean Cup as well. But they're not allowed to participate in the World Cup. It's a similar story for Bonaire, who are, controlled by the Netherlands. So, yeah, in some ways it's quite restrictive, but, you know, I think they're just grateful to be able to participate at the CONCACAF level. Martinique are actually a nation that are developing very, very impressively, and they've got a decent domestic setup, which, you know, is quite rare in the Caribbean. I'm pretty sure their players are semi-pro or pro, so they get paid some money. So that's helping their national team, and I think people raised a few eyebrows at the Gold Cup in 2013. I remember watching the Martinique game against Canada.
Oh yes,
I remember that in the opener, and I think that they beat them 1-0. So, yeah, it is interesting with that, but that dates back to colonisation, and who knows? Maybe in the future, these islands, French and Dutch, and also you've got the British overseas territories like the Cayman Islands and Montserrat. Maybe they will be able to be granted FIFA membership if FIFA bends their rules.
Yeah, absolutely. We'll see what happens there. And here's the funny thing too, because as you know, Thierry Henry has just recently retired. He's working for Sky Sports over in England, where you are. He is also, even though he played for France, I mean, his family tree is basically in one of those French islands that are, you know, under French law and not a FIFA membership. And he said that, you know, because I think he said his grandmother is from Guadeloupe, and he says if he ever wanted to play for Guadeloupe, and since he's retired from the French national team, he might do that, but he said there's no chance.
Well, Julien Faber, formerly of Real Madrid, he recently ran out for Martinique because he used to play for the French national team, but he represented Martinique because the rule is it's a 5-year gap. So once you've had a rest from the national team and not played for them for 5 years, then you're allowed to represent if you're eligible. So I don't know about Thierry Henry. That might be a little bit far-fetched.
True.
But, Florent Malouda's one as well for French Guiana. Florent Malouda, who used to play for Chelsea, he's eligible to play for French Guiana.
Okay. Yeah. Let's, before we finish off, let's talk about that, because obviously French Guiana is going to be taking on Honduras in that goal aggregate playoff for the final spot for the 2015 Gold Cup. That's going to be this July. You know, do they have a good shot? I mean, I know Honduras is going to be a tough opposition because they finished as the fifth place finisher in the Central Americana tournament. I mean, do you think French Guiana has a solid chance to upsetting Honduras?
At the end of the day, I think they are underdogs, and there's no real doubt in that. Honduras, on paper anyway, are the stronger team. I'm actually quite surprised that Honduras are in this position. I thought they might do a little bit better in the Central Central American tournament. But it depends very much on French Guiana's ability to recruit, because I think the squad at the moment, as admirable as it is with the domestic-based players, they do need to strengthen. Torvich, the captain who plays in the heart of the defence, he's one of their best players, and he plays abroad, I believe, in Finland. If they can look to maybe pull off one of these major coups, like getting Florent Malouda, who used to play for Chelsea, as I said, I think Marc-Antoine of Fortuné of Wigan Athletic in England, he's eligible, and I think he's previously expressed an interest. So if they can bolster the squad, then I think they stand a pretty decent chance. It's two legs, you know, miracles can happen. If they did qualify for the Gold Cup, it would be the first time in their history. And Bernard Lamar, who's the vice president there at the Federation, has said if they qualify for the Gold Cup, then it's their equivalent of the World Cup. and it would be a serious achievement. So fingers crossed for French Guiana, and we're following that very, very closely indeed.
And if you want to go visit Nathan Carr's site, once again, in one whole word, thehomeofcaribbeanfootball.wordpress.com. Nathan, thank you very much for the time. I appreciate it, and I hope to have you on again soon.
No problem. Thanks very much for having me. Cheers. Nope. Thank you.
Cheers.
And once again, Nathan Carr from thehomeofcaribbeanfootball.wordpress.com. Anything and everything in the Caribbean, in the Caribbean zone, in CONCACAF. Nathan is from England, so it's amazing how he's able to watch and learn everything that's going on down in the Caribbean. At the same time, he'll be back with us next week on the Under-20 CONCACAF tournament to see who will go to the playoffs and who will win the top of the groups to go automatically to the Under-20 World Cup in New Zealand this upcoming May 30th. Chad Hollingsworth is Dayton Dutch Lions now officially down the PDL as they get relegate themselves. Talks about the brand new USL Pro season 2015. A lot of teams, a lot of new MLS 2 clubs, Toronto, Montreal, Real Salt Lake, Seattle, Portland, everything from Reckless Challenge. Here is Chad Hollingsworth.
The Four Seas Fire, American Soccer Show, first show of 2015. We got more great stuff to talk about. And with me right now is my good friend Chad Hollingsworth from Reckless Challenge. Chad, how are you? And welcome. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year, Daniel. Doing well. Thanks for having me back.
No problem at all. Thanks for being back, Chad. Great story you had on last year in Reckless Challenge, obviously. The United Soccer Leagues are going to use their professional division right now. So many teams, of course, now coming in. Half of them are affiliated with their parent clubs in Major League Soccer. Of course, some of these teams are going to be affiliates of some of those MLS teams. And right now it looks like we're going to see, once again, a two-conference table for the 2015 season.
Yeah, lots of exciting stuff that came out of the annual general meeting down there in Clearwater Beach, Florida, about mid-December. It's an exciting time for the league. This version of USL's professional division launched in 2011. 13 teams we saw in the early years. One or two leave, one or two come in each season. But now with this partnership with Major League Soccer, it's blowing up. And it's, like you said, half the teams are going to be affiliates of Major League Soccer teams. So, half the new teams. So we're up to 24 teams now, all four time zones. It's amazing. We have just as many independent clubs joining as we do in all its affiliates. It's a good time to be a fan of soccer in America, especially lower division soccer.
No, absolutely. And you know what? That's what we want to see. We want to see the growth of the game, not just in Major League Soccer, but in all leagues below Major League Soccer. And hopefully, we'll see one of these teams really shine. I mean, look at what happened last year, Sacramento Republic. I mean, they were just an expansion side, but they took it seriously. They didn't just say, okay, we're just here for the heck of it for year one. No, they went all the way to win the USL Pro Championship, beating the Harrisburg City Islanders at Bonnie Field. I mean, that was just absolutely a dream season for Sacramento.
Oh, yeah, and not only did they do it right on the field, but they did it right off the field and in the stands. I mean, breaking a USL Pro attendance record in the first match, which wasn't at Bonnie Field, but and I forget the name of the park they played in temporarily, but they had, I don't know how many tens of thousands of fans that were there, and then sold out every game thereafter, and went well over the 100,000 mark this season at home for USL Pro, and it's fantastic what they've done. They've got a great organization, and the good thing is that the ownership groups in USL Pro, where they compete with one another, they cooperate with one another off the field, and I'd like to see some of these new clubs, especially the independent clubs not affiliated with MLS, take some cues from the ownership groups like the Sacramento group out there who've done so well.
Absolutely, and we have to give credit to the Galaxy as well. I mean, obviously, they had a pretty good season as well, and they ran into the tornado that is the Sacramento Republic, obviously, in the playoffs. But still, to see what the Galaxy has done and then all of a sudden, just popping up out of nowhere, the Vancouver Whitecaps will have a two-team, the Sounders, the Timbers in the Western Conference, and in the Eastern Conference, we already got Montreal Impact with FC Montreal. I guess we're waiting to see what's going to happen with the Toronto FC two-team. Already the New York Red Bulls are going to have a two-team that's going to be playing in the Eastern Conference as well with Montreal and Toronto for this upcoming season. It's just a fun time to see the USL Pro League not just expanding with brand new teams like Colorado Springs Switchbacks, and let's not forget also Real Salt Lake's Monarchs, obviously with Salt Lake, but a different name, which is not that bad either. I think that's a great thing. Now we're going to see Tulsa Roughnecks coming out and having that Oklahoma State rivalry, as well as seeing a new St. Louis team coming into third division. And I think the best, in my opinion, I think Louisville City, that's going to be an interesting situation for this year. What's your opinion about that?
Yeah, I think Louisville is going to be definitely an interesting situation. The principal owner in Louisville, William Stilpenall, was a minority partner in Orlando City, who obviously had great success in USL Pro after Mr. Rollins brought that team over from Austin. So I want to mention real quick, I find it very ironic that the year that Orlando gets promoted, sorry, Ted, to MLS, it's the same year that Austin gets promoted from PDL to USL Pro. There's a little bit of poetic justice in that for me. But you're right. Louisville, it's going to be interesting to watch. You know, they got a lot of fervor down there for their college soccer. They've had a PDL team down there for quite some time with the Rovers. Now, you know, they're going to run this experiment and see if that's a town that can support professional soccer, albeit at a lower division. You know, they'd be spending the first, I don't know how many seasons, down there at Slugger Field. It's a baseball field that they share with the Cincinnati Reds AAA affiliate.
Mm-hmm.
But they're not the only team in the league that's going to be doing a baseball field. Arizona did a baseball field last year and will be again this year. And the Tulsa team also at 1OK Field will be in the baseball field.
Yeah, absolutely. The home of the Louisville Bats, AAA affiliate of the Cincinnati Reds, that's going to be an interesting situation to see. Obviously, at the moment, you know, that's the only place you can play unless you're going to play at the local college field. But then again, you know, you never know how their soccer field is or their football stadium is, how big it is. So, of course, that's the University of Louisville. So
That Louisville soccer stadium, they just built it. They just played the first year in it, and it is beautiful. And I wouldn't be surprised if the college told the pro teams to stay away.
Yeah.
It's a magnificent facility they have down there for their college soccer.
Yeah, I bet it is. And once again, Austin Aztecs are coming back into the USL Pro League for 2015. And I just like you, I felt the same way the original Aztecs when they moved to Orlando. And nothing against Orlando, because Orlando's kind of like my second home, but I felt bad when Orlando got the Aztecs to move the way they did. You know, I felt bad for the people of Austin that they had their team move out of, like in the middle of the night to go to Orlando. Now, obviously Orlando, good for them, they're in MLS, but I'm also happy now that the Aztecs had a PDL team return, and now they're back in the professional league in the third division right now, and I'm just happy for everyone in Austin that they finally got their team back.
Yeah, I think you can look for some good things from that club right off the bat. They've already affiliated with the Columbus Crew, who were my Dayton Dutch Lions affiliates last year. And they've also got a new affiliate down in Brazil. I forget the name of that club, but the goaltender that they just signed a few weeks back is already down in Brazil training with that club. And the coach down there is no stranger to American soccer. And I think they're going to do well. I know they've got some other good signings right off the bat. It looks like they're building a strong midfield. And if you're like me, you like to build your team from the midfield. And they've got some good signings down there and some that have yet to be announced.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. That club from Brazil is Club Coritiba down in the Brazilian league. So obviously that's a great job by the Aztecs to get that partnership with that great Brazilian club. Obviously, I feel bad for you now because Dayton Dutch Lions are no longer in the USL Pro League. They've decided to relegate themselves financially to the PDL. But I'm glad they're still around. Don't get me wrong. I'm glad they're still around for you, Chad. But still, What was the main reason for Dayton to relegate themselves to PDL? Was it because of us not a permanent stadium home, or was it other situations?
I think there's a bunch of factors, but I think primarily it's financial liability. You know, when they started in 2010 as a PDL club, and they were going to promote it to USL's second division in 2011. Well, we all remember what happened in 2011 with lower division soccer. We ended up with the 2011 was the first year. 2010 was the year of the combined NASL, USL Pro, whatever USSF called that league that played that year. And Dayton was going to be in USL 2, but then there was no USL 2, it was USL Pro.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, I think it was just too early for them to try to promote to a full professional franchise. It just didn't quite have the attendance out here in Dayton to support a professional team. So they're going to get back to doing what they did well in 2010, and that was PDL. I think they finished second or third in their division that year. Had some quality players, both American and Dutch. And I'm interested to see if they're going to bring some more of the Dutch guys back to play. They like to take some of the lower division Dutch guys and bring them over here and give them a chance to experience soccer in America. And that's always fun to watch the Americans and the Dutch guys play side by side. But, you know, I was kind of bummed at first, but after most of the offseason, even wondering if I was going to have a club, I'm thrilled to have them still around. I'm excited to go out and support the Dayton Dutch Lions and PDL. I mentioned on Twitter and to some of the other guys in the Orange Legion here that, you know, we don't support a league, we support a team.
Mm-hmm.
And so PDL, USL Pro, NPSL, NASL, MLS, you know, wherever we're playing, you know, the few of us who are hardcore Dutch Lions fans are going to be out there giving support. So hopefully we can get some local talent mixed in, some of these local college kids here in the Miami Valley, southwest Ohio, and get some of the local fans out to support some local kids.
Absolutely, and that's always number one in my book. As long as you're still supporting that club no matter where they are, they do deserve that support. So hopefully the Dutch Lions will have a pretty good PDL season. Unfortunately, it looked obviously they will not. Well, we'll see what happens with U.S. Soccer if they do give Dayton that Open Cup spot for the early rounds. But other than that, it just looks like we're going to have ourselves an exciting 2015. We know the Eagles are no longer in USL Pro this year, but the Charlotte Independents will take over their spot. And what do you know about those new owners with this new club in the downtown Charlotte area?
Well, this is an ownership group that has owned a major league lacrosse team in Charlotte, North Carolina for some years now, and looking to get into professional soccer. And like almost every new club that joins USL Pro these days, you know, they state their ultimate goal is to get into MLS by, you know, whatever year, but they're going to have to get in line behind Minnesota and Sacramento, if you ask me. With that being said, it's taken some time, I think, for this ownership group to get the ball rolling down there, but based on what I'm seeing on social media, they've got a pretty good fan base who's chomping at the bit and ready to go. They announced their first two player signings the other day. Jorge Herrera is a goal-scoring forward. Native of Colombia, he's been around, he was with the Charlotte Eagles for a number of years, and Ben Noon, who played midfield for the Charlotte Eagles, he's also a veteran of USL Pro. Those are two solid first signings for the Eagles. They're going to have some name recognition in the market, and they're two solid players that can provide some veteran leadership to any of the new guys they might sign. The really big news out of Charlotte this week is they're working on getting their stadium set up. And I forget the location exactly, but the original intentions for this club were to play in Memorial Stadium in downtown Charlotte. But there needed to be some renovations done before that stadium was ready for professional soccer. So a lot of the talk since then has been, well, you know, we can use this college, we can use that college, maybe we can use multiple different stadiums throughout the season. And having witnessed the Dutch Lions play in multiple stadiums in a season, I just thought that was going to be a nightmare. It keeps the fans guessing on any given night where the team's going to be. You don't want to have to chase your team around your own city. What I'm hearing now, though, is that there's a soccer complex right there in Charlotte, and the team is talking about building a temporary stadium just for this season, and I think that's a fantastic move. The county's going to own the land, but apparently the club would have complete control over game-day operations and would be able to serve alcohol and control all the concessions. And I think that'd be a big investment, but I think it's an important investment and the right move for that club to make if that's the choice they take.
Absolutely, and that's great news to hear. Chad, listen, thank you so much for the time, and thank you for the information. And don't forget, if you want to learn more about what's going on, not just in MLS, in the NASL, in the USL, and everything in American soccer as well, Reckless Challenge, Chad Hollingsworth is your guy. Chad, thank you so much. Happy New Year, and I will talk to you soon, my friend.
All right, Daniel, thanks. Have a good one.
That's Chad Hollingsworth once again from Reckless Challenge on the 2015 USL Pro setup for this upcoming season. And let's see what's going to happen with the third division of American soccer, now the affiliation of Major League Soccer. Joining me, I brought the band back together, former members of the MLS Talk podcast, formerly of MLS Talk, now, of course, World Soccer Talk, Earl Reed of PhillySoccerPage.net, Robert Hay of whatever website he wants to be a part of, I don't care. He'll just tell you whatever is on his mind. And, gentlemen, thanks for coming over. Happy New Year. And, Earl, I saw something on Twitter just recently. I can take requests. What's the question?
What's the question?
Yeah, what's the question?
I don't know what the question is. Probably has something to do with Jozy Altidore and the fact he's going up to Toronto in a trade for what appears to be a trade for Jermaine Defoe. So Toronto gets to dump Jermaine Defoe, and I guess Altidore gets to go to Toronto, which, you know, should be good for him getting back to MLS and getting into a league where hopefully he faces less organized defenses and maybe can find his touch again. But I think there's probably a few teams in MLS that are feel a little bit aggrieved that he's going up to Toronto, which now they have two top men's national team players up there. So that should be interesting.
It really should be. At the same time, maybe it's Sunderland basically dumping Altidore and Defoe spurning Toronto. Maybe we go that route. How's that?
I mean, they're both kind of getting rid of some baggage that they don't know what to do with, and I suppose Sunderland might be able to get the most out of Defoe, which, I mean, he didn't exactly, you know, go, you know, come up dry last year. He scored some goals for Toronto, but, you know, I think, you know, he would probably be rather playing, you know, at home in the EPL, and he's wanted there, and Altidore has been not getting much time at all in the northeast of England there, and MLS is a league where he should feel comfortable. The question will be whether or not Toronto can put enough around him. Obviously, they have Michael Bradley, too, which should help, but, you know, will they get to the playoffs? Is that enough to get them there? It depends on whether or not Altidore can find his form again. I mean, he had a good stretch in the Netherlands there a couple of years ago, so hopefully, you know, maybe he can get that back together. From what we know of Toronto's history, it's been a struggle for them. So, you know, and it tends to sort of snowball into some real ugly goings as the year goes on. So maybe if he gets off to a clean start and, you know, really puts in some goals in the first few weeks, then that will be positive momentum for the Reds.
Robert, obviously Jurgen Klinsmann has kept on saying that American players need to leave Major League Soccer and play in Europe, but it looks like the players that are here for the national team are coming back to MLS to get the minutes. Is this a concern now, or maybe Jurgen Klinsmann can ease this concern? Because let's be honest, the offensive players are getting minutes here when they're not able to get minutes playing in Europe. Well, you know, I think it's a perfectly understandable concern by your Klinsmann. I mean, you know, we tend to think, and I think I shouldn't say we, some members of the soccer media tend to associate MLS with the U.S. national team. And what's good for one is good for the other. And to be truthful, if you're Jurgen Klinsmann, you have one job and one job only, and that is to have your team that you pick advance as far as possible in the World Cup. You know, there's some sub-goals, of course, in there, winning the Gold Cup, blah, 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 blah. But at the end of the day, your success is judged by how far you get in the World Cup. And when you look at your roster, you want players that are able to play at the highest level against quality competition and be ready to respond to world-class players that you're going to be playing against. And so it's understandable that he would be concerned that players would be all coming to MLS because MLS basically, despite the advertisement of diversity of teams and styles and things like that, for the most part, MLS is a very physical league where you're going to see the same kinds of players week in and week out. So really what benefits his team and his setup is to have players who have faced, different styles, different country, players from different countries, and that he can pull together and mix and match based on an opponent to win a match, in qualifying and then in these international tournaments. So it's very understandable why he would want these players to be playing at the highest level that they possibly can. And that level may not necessarily be MLS and ASL or something like that. It might be, the championship in England. It might be the Eredivisie. It might be Serie A. It might be Serie B. Who knows? But, the fact that all of these players come running home to the U.S., I think, is a concern for him, and I can understand why he would be concerned about that.
All right, guys. Now to start this conversation in a certain real serious tone, not that last topic was not serious, it really is, but the collective bargaining agreement right now, both sides are taking a break, and in a couple of days they'll get back on their horses and try to stretch this out to hopefully avoid a work stoppage. Earl, we'll go with you first, and then we'll have Robert respond second. Earl, do you feel there could be a work stoppage either from the player's side or from the owner's side for 2015 before we kick off on the first weekend of March?
Two words. Absolutely not.
That's some hard-hitting analysis right there.
Yes, it is.
I mean,
and that's unusual,
I mean,
for Earl.
Well, I mean, what do you expect? I mean, you hear absolutely nothing. I mean, most sports leagues, you have players associations out there, yelling about how the owners are, squeezing them for every dime, that they're having to eat peanut butter and jelly out of their lunchbox at lunchtime, while the owners are saying that, they are losing hundreds of millions of dollars and, crying poor. And that's how you end up with work. I mean, this is the least rancorous, and if you look at the players that are serving on the board for the MLS Players Association, I mean, where's your Eddie Johnson? I mean, didn't Eddie Johnson just squabble about money? Where are guys who, why not, I'd love to see a guy like Hercules Gomez come on there and actually have something to say. But, no, I mean, the guys that I'm looking at are guys who are long-term vets, who are happy that MLS is a league where they can actually ply their trade domestically. They'll do that probably for whatever salary MLS is willing to pay them. It's $50,000 a year, if it's $100,000 a year. I can't see there being a work stoppage because I don't think that the Players Association has the gumption to be able to take it at the league. So, the only thing I think we can really hope for is maybe these guys decide that they're really going to take a tack and say, you know what, we really want free agency. We want, after 5 years in the league, that teams no longer have rights to a player unless they offer them a top five salary at the position or something like that. Other than that, I just don't see it happening. Maybe they'll raise the salary cap by 15%. I don't know. I just don't see them having a whole lot of fight. And it bothers me because you watch a lot of the media on Twitter and the media has more of a fight for this than the you know, the blogging media has more of a fight for this than it seems like the Players Association does. I mean, I see, you don't see any kind of, you know, in the press fighting. I mean, where is this? I mean, and this is for a league that prides itself on trying to make mountains out of molehills over every little thing, and having press releases about this and that. You'd think that having negative media about from your Players Association would actually be a good thing. You know, it would generate headlines on your ESPN websites, but nothing. It's like the deadest thing in the world. So I don't see there being a work stoppage. They're going to get right along. You'll have Clint Irwin talking about having to work at 7-Eleven in his off hours because he doesn't make enough, but they'll be okay with it because they're happy that they have a job in this country.
Robert?
Okay.
Well, you know, the only stories that I've read coming out of MLS in this critical debate time between the players union and the ownership is the fact that Cristiano Ronaldo may be thinking one day possibly about coming to MLS. So you can see that the league is focused on these important issues, at least publicly. But, yeah, you know, I kind of am agreeing with Earl a little bit on this one. I mean, it has been an incredibly quiet process, and there are some major, major issues that need to be worked out in this league. You know, yeah, it is seeing success, but there's a huge gap between the Jozy Altidores of the world and the incoming players. You know, there's some things that need to be worked out with new players coming into the league, both international players and players coming out of college. You know, is Generation Adidas a long-term sustainable option? Is it something that the players should want? You know, free agency is another big thing. You know, there really is no true free agency in this league. You know, and who does that benefit and who does that hurt? I mean, you see these drafts of veteran players go through and they just sit there for round after round because they're tied to their salary and things like that. So there's some major issues that this league needs to work out. But, you know, again, it seems like most of the focus is on chasing the dollar from the big ownership groups, new potential ownership groups, and the players benefit from having a league where they can ply their trade and they don't have to go out and, you know, try and find a job in another country. And I think that's where the real downside to not having a robust soccer pyramid is. You know, if there was a healthier NASL right now, that could challenge MLS, and I think we'd be having a different discussion and the players would have a little bit more leverage. But as it is, you know, these players making $30,000 a year are happy to be playing in the top level of professional soccer in the U.S. And, you know, you don't want to, I guess, make too much noise on that. So it is unfortunate there isn't more of a debate going on here. That's the way this league is sometimes.
Well, and the other thing that the league has sort of done, which has undermined the Players Association, is by bringing back all of these guys from Europe, it's basically saying to the Players Association, look, even our best players can't make it over there. So, you know, what is Sal Zizzo going to be able to do for, you know, a long-term career? You know, is he going to be able to go over there to England and play in the second division, the third division? Probably not. I mean, do you even want to try? Is it worth your time? You know, so maybe you just need to be happy that we have a league here and, you know, take your maudlin salary and go ahead and, you know, work your summer camp, you know, the soccer camps during the summers to try to help supplement your income. And, you know, so I don't know. I mean, it just seems like everything is, you know, it ends up working against the players, but they work against themselves because they just don't have many other options. I mean, what else are they going to do? Like you said, NASL isn't really a viable option. And you have MLS going and throwing a lot of money around at players like Altidore, like Gerrard, Lampard, Villa, you know, and you know, all this money getting thrown around, and the people who seem to take it the worst are the guys that are, you know, entry level who, you know, barely make you know, what most people would consider a decent full-time salary anymore in this, you know, inflated economy.
Yeah, very true. And that's going to be one of those discussions that I'll keep on going about, you know, is the players union really trying to force something against MLS's hand. I mean, we'll never know. We'll find out. But this also
goes to my
next question.
In,
go ahead, Earl.
I mean, a player in New York City making $54,000 a year or something like that. I mean, do you think that anybody could actually live like that in, I mean, you know, I mean, it's such a tough market. I mean, and let alone Los Angeles, too, with real estate prices, things like that. I mean, it's just a, I don't know. I mean, it's a very difficult, you know, situation. You have, I don't know. Anyway, sorry to butt in there. But
no, that's okay.
I mean,
that's all right.
It just seems to me like it's a very difficult, you know, situation, especially for the entry-level players. But I guess that's, you know, entry-level players kind of get it tough in every league. But, you know, whereas some leagues are making in the hundreds of thousands, you know, MLS entry-level players are making more like $30,000 to $40,000 a year.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. I mean, look, entry-level players should get, if possible, or as close to the same amount like you would have a, you know, an entry-level player or a fringe player that's playing for Manchester City or Manchester United or Liverpool or whatever, you know, in England. I mean, that's the idea that what it should be. But let me go now to the Frank Lampard situation, because I had on Carter Kirschneier and Dwayne Rollins last week on Tuesday because of the whole thing that just went down a couple of ticks before we came into the new year. Robert, I'll go to you first. Because of the whole Frank Lampard situation, that City Football Group, Manchester City, they basically gave Lampard a contract that's not an MLS contract, and they claimed that he was a part of New York City FC, but in reality, he was really a Manchester City player. I mean, we see this circumventing. Do you think or feel this is against or trying to avoid financial fair play tagged by Man City because of what they just did? Because there was a lot of outrage, not just with the New York City FC fans, but, you know, the bloggers, the American soccer media, even the local New York soccer media was very angry to see that Lampard, let's face it, he wasn't even on the list of people earning money in MLS when he signed that fraudulent deal, sort of.
Yeah, the whole situation is an absolute embarrassment to MLS, to the New York, to the Manchester City ownership group, and just to the idea of financial fair play. And it's interesting how you see some of the biggest clubs in the world trying and getting around this principle of financial fair play. And, you know, Manchester City stashing players in its sister clubs all over, and you know, using that to offset the contracts or to hide the contracts and things like that. You have teams like Chelsea that are loaning players out left and right to avoid, you know, limits on player ownership and things like that. And, you know, a lot of these clubs have their own ways of getting around it. But, you know, to sit there, I mean, at the end of the day, what does this mean for MLS? It means MLS is, you know, just a joke shell corporation for Manchester City. It's a tool. It's a tool for this larger club. And this is not an equal partnership. We knew this going in, and people tried to fool themselves and say, well, no, you know, this is a true franchise. It's independent. You know, it's just owned by the same ownership group. Yeah, they have the same colors. Yeah, they have the same logo. Yeah, they don't have a place to play. Yeah, you know, they're going to be sending players back and forth. And, yeah, you know, it's Frank Lampard's just going to be playing in Manchester City for a couple of months. It'll be okay until MLS season starts and we can start bringing the fans in to see him. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And people kept telling themselves that this was not a, you know, a smelly situation. And, I mean, finally, this kind of blew the lid off of the whole thing, that this was just a huge cash grab by MLS. They sat there and they said, $100 million, sure, sure, whatever, that works. Yep, yeah, you can make it work, sure, 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 absolutely. And, you know, I feel bad for, you know, the New York City fans who think they were going to be seeing, you know, this great player play for their team from the beginning. I feel bad for, you know, fans of other teams that would be playing, you know, New York City FC. You know, what about those Frank Lampard fans in, I'm not having the schedule in front of me, D.C. or Philadelphia or somewhere like that, when they come to visit in March and they don't have him on their roster to play? I mean, yeah, ultimately the team isn't answerable to them, but it's kind of a Bush League thing to try and sell tickets based on him, you know, being part of this team when he absolutely was not. So, you could tell I'm a little bit passionate about this issue, because I think that if you want to take yourself seriously as a league, you try and get these things sorted out. You don't just try to become a tool for Manchester City. And if this was another EPL team, I'd feel just as angry. But I think the league really, truly duped themselves just because it was a nice payday for them. And, you know, they've already started off wrongly with this New York franchise. And, you know, this franchise could be something special in this league, and they've just made it a joke. You know, I don't care if they finally bring in Lampard and they have David Villa and, some, you know, they sign Mick Discrute and all this nonsense. They're a joke shadow team that's basically at the whim of Manchester City. And, you know, if Manchester City decides they want to bring a player over or cut the funding or whatever like that, you know, that's the way it is. God forbid that the revenue stream for the ownership group dries up and they have to make some tough choices. What happens to New York City FC then? And I think we've seen that they're low in the totem pole on this one.
Absolutely. And Earl, just to remain on the topic, I mean, we've seen a lot. I mean, I know with Philadelphia only been 5 years old, you've seen a bunch of changes roster-wise, coaching-wise. And could you imagine if the Philadelphia Union, if they were owned by somebody else and they had different colors, not the colors that they have now with the gold down the middle of the shirt with the blue on the outside, it could have been maybe another club from maybe Italy. It could have been maybe another club from Spain. And they pulled the same shenanigans like Manchester City just did. I mean, this is a situation where if you are a club that you want to be dedicated to and they pulled that off, would you still want to be a part of this club that all of a sudden that they pulled this sort of sneaky, okay, this is our contract for City Football Group. This is not an MLS contract.
I mean, it depends. I mean, I still think that New York City is probably going to be a pretty decent team. So if, you know, from that standpoint, I'm sure that there will be plenty of supporters up there who continue to follow the team. You know, I just think that this really shows that in the last year or two, Don Garber and MLS have really been caught more or less with their pants down. And unfortunately, you know, they haven't been very organized. They haven't been ahead of the game. Instead, they've been having to play catch up. And I'm not exactly sure what, you know, I think this New York City FC team has been most of the reason why they were so dead set on putting this team into existence that it trained much of their focus towards that and away from some trouble spots. So you end up with, you know, a team like Chivas USA having to fold because it's in dire straits when they could have maybe headed that off in the past and figured out a workable solution in order to keep that team afloat and maybe even move it to another area. You know, relocate it, and then maybe award a, you know, we've seen that happen in leagues like the NFL where, you know, Cleveland, even though they weren't necessarily struggling, they didn't have a great stadium situation, which Chivas didn't. Cleveland was moved to Baltimore, and then Cleveland was awarded an expansion franchise. You could have moved Chivas USA to, let's say, Orlando City, you know, and then awarded LA the franchise in 2 years, and then it wouldn't have looked quite as bad for the league, but instead they've sort of had their, like I said, their pants, you know, caught with their pants down, and they ended up having to do a whitewash of that situation, which is basically a team folding. And you never like to see that. I think it's much more elegant to have a relocation, and it still stinks for the fans out there, but at least then it looks like you're not in, you know, in chaos. You know, with now, let's move back to NYCFC. You know, you have you know, a group in Manchester City, you know, like you said, want to splash a lot of money to front a team in MLS. Well, you know, I'm not sure that Garber and company did their due diligence to realize what would be expected by Manchester City. What, you know, didn't foresee that, oh, this might just be a place where we're going to loan some players or we're going to, you know, sign a player and then loan them back to try, you know, like you said, to try to avoid some financial regulations. I mean, all of that is, you know, to me that makes Garber and company look bad. I mean, look like they've not had their act together. And then couple on all of top, you know, on top of all of that, the things with the blind draw for Jermaine Jones. This deal now where let me just mention back again, you know, just kind of like mentioning back to Altidore. You know, U.S. men's national team players were supposed to be special players when they came back to the league, and you weren't supposed to see them concentrated in any one area. That's why you had this allocation ranking. So now instead of having, you know, Michael Bradley and Jozy Altidore on, like, a couple different teams within the league, you have them both on one team, which is even worse because it's not even a team in the U.S. You aren't even getting any kind of bump because they're both marketable to the team that they're at. Instead, they're in Canada, which, I mean, yes, they're great players, but, you know, does anybody really plan? I mean, maybe there's certain people probably plan to travel up to Toronto to see them play, but, you know, it's just been handled so poorly, and I think it's all been a distraction because MLS needed to mortgage the house in order to do stadium studies for New York City FC, and then that all fell through, and now, so they're starting with a team that is, you know, has, you know, lost a player that was supposed to be their marquee guy, Lampard, and they're playing in a stadium that isn't an MLS stadium, isn't a soccer-specific stadium, it's a baseball stadium that is going to not be a very good place to watch soccer. So, you know, the last couple of years, I just say Major League Soccer has done a really, I mean, almost like a C-minus, maybe even D-plus grade of how they've handled a lot of the situations. And, you know, this is something Garber has to get right or else, I mean, I'm wondering when the owners are going to start raising some beef about this because it's, you know, they're kind of looking pretty disorganized and not very professional right now.
I'll answer that real quick if that's all right. You know, the owners aren't responding to it because every time, if you have the bucks to back it up, you're getting the most say. I mean, look at Seattle. Seattle is still drawing huge crowds. And, you know, they're bringing in the cash, and they were, you could hear the gripes from the fans and the ownership group about unfair treatment. You know, they were looking at LA and seeing Landon Donovan, Robbie Keane, and stuff like that. All of a sudden, hey, look who's on the roster for Seattle. You know, you have a new ownership group in Toronto, one that's been supportive of the league, and, you know, oh, our fans are suffering. We need to redo this, and we need some help. All of a sudden, Michael Bradley and Jermaine Defoe are on the roster. So, you know, if you can back it up and start griping, the league looks after you. And it's the groups that, you know, the ownership groups that don't have that financial pay to play. Well, I won't say pay to play, that has a negative connotation, but, you know, it's the groups that aren't splashing the cash and you know, becoming the cool new brand that are the ones sitting there suffering, saying what's left for me. And they don't have as much of a voice.
That's very true. And that's the one thing I think needs to change a little bit within the ownership group here that runs MLS. Obviously, fans are very outspoken in Portland, Seattle, and Vancouver. Ownership does listen to their fans, obviously, and everywhere else, if possible. The ownership groups do listen to their fans. There's maybe one or two that doesn't. Of course, you know, when you're talking about a team that I cover and, of course, supported, still do kind of, but you know, you get a guy who's successful for 2 years, you bring in a new general manager / sporting director, and he's like, nope, you don't fit my profile, even though you can't describe what it is. Okay, I'll throw this out at both of you. Go Earl, and then we'll go to Robert. Obviously, you both know Mike Pecky was fired out of the blue after the whole Lampard situation in the Bronx. Ali Curtis is now the sporting director of the club, and apparently analytics, even though I have no clue what analytics is, I don't think Ali Curtis even knows what analytics is, because even though he thinks that he's got it all set up and everything, I think this guy, right off the bat, came from the league office and just has absolutely no clue right now how to run a professional club, no matter what level it is in the U.S. I mean, what the heck is going on, Earl? I just don't understand it. And unfortunately, you've got Sakevich.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's tough to make a case that Major League Soccer is doing everything they can to win markets. And, I mean, New York City right now is, you know, a tire fire altogether, whether it's, you know, the new team or whether it's the old team. It's, you know, bad press over bad press, you know, from, you know, a legendary player retiring to not really having anybody to backfill that. I guess, you know, and then, like you said, with Lampard up in, you know, it just looks like, you know, you've got this huge market that, you know, Major League Soccer supposedly wants to capitalize on, and they just drop the ball left and right. You know, you have a team building momentum in New York, at Red Bull Arena, and they, you know, can their head coach, who has, you know, had some good success. Now, maybe tougher without Thierry Henry. But, you know, they should still have Bradley Wright Phillips. He's put in a bunch of goals. But I don't know. I mean, it's just it's mind-blowing that the league is as awkward with most of their dealings as they are. And it gives the detractors for the league a lot of fodder. I mentioned today, you know, this evening on Twitter, that it almost becomes tiring trying to follow this league because of all of the maneuvering and the machinations and some of the, you know, frankly, asinine ways they do things and the lack of reasoning and the lack of transparency. It's almost easier just to say to yourself, you know, I'm going to follow a league that's, you know, thousands of miles away just because it's easier to make sense of it all just by saying that there are haves and there are have-nots, but I know that's the way it is, and, you know, there's none of this chicanery where you've got teams that have been horrible but can, you know, all of a sudden have plenty of cachet in order to get the top two men's national team players or two of the top men's national team players in the U.S., you know, north of the border. Just it is head scratching and makes it very difficult to follow MLS.
Go ahead, Robert.
Daniel, I just have one thing to say about the whole New York Red Bull situation. That's so Metro Star.
No, it's called That's So Metro.
I forgot. I still had to get used to the old name. That's So Metro. I mean, that's really just you can't have nice things with the franchise, you win a supporter shield, and look what happens. So you just got to get used to it.
Oh, I've been used to it. Just thought that we finally turned a corner, and then here it comes out of the blue. But this wasn't coming from the Red Bull people from Austria. This just came from Ali Curtis out of the blue. Now, I think Jesse Marsh will do fine, and it's not his fault. I don't blame Marsh at all for this because he doesn't make these calls. This was completely all Ali Curtis. This never came from Austria, from the head of Red Bull in Salzburg. This is all Ali Curtis. And it's just very, very disheartening to see a man, not only a former player of this club, not only an assistant coach of this club, but, you know, he had two positive seasons. Maybe the playoffs more this past season than the regular season, but still. Mike Petke had the proper steps to go forward. Gentlemen, thank you very much for your time. Hope to talk to you guys for your individual sides for the preview shows. Happy New Year to both of you. Happy New Year to your families. And we'll definitely talk down the road and some interesting other things as well. Thanks again, guys.
Thanks, Daniel.
Thank you.
Earl Reed, Robert Hay. These men know what they're doing. These men know what they're talking about. Great guys, as always. Very knowledgeable of American soccer here in the U.S. Always here. Real opinions on the 40 Teams Fire American Soccer Show. Hey, listen, I'm not going to be ass-kissing a lot. At the same time, I'm not going to be bashing a lot. We're going to be fair and right down the middle. But the truth is, we care about this league. We want this league to succeed. And sometimes the people who run this league, you want to go to the nearest wall and bang your head at it. So we'll see what happens. And now as we finish up this first show of 2015, now I'm going to go to the Red Bulls situation with Mike Petke. I am very, very disappointed in what Ali Curtis has done. I understand he wants to make the most important move in his first career as a sporting director slash general manager of this club, coming straight out of MLS. I understand he wants to put a stamp on what he is all about. And once again, this is not Jesse Marsh's fault. He did not contact Ali Curtis and tell him, hey, if you get rid of Mike Petke, I want to be the head coach. That did not happen. This is all on the shoulders of Ali Curtis. This is all on the shoulders of a gentleman who basically is a raw rookie and has no clue what he's doing. If you did listen to the Extra Time radio on MLS Soccer's website, he couldn't even answer those questions properly. Could not answer a single question truthfully. Went round in circles. This man basically just came out of nowhere. And all he did was just talk about a bunch of baloney. Does this hurt? Damn right. Mike Petke, de facto head coach, out of the blue. And what did he do? He basically, in his first ever head coaching stint, for the team that he played for the team that he was an assistant coach for, a caretaker manager, and then became the manager of this club that we all love. This time around, this was not an answer or an edict from Austria, like I have told the other two gentlemen. This was from Curtis himself. This is not about the club. Curtis, even though he was named the sporting director of the New York Red Bulls, and even though he is running it, this is not a club decision. This is a Curtis decision. Because at the moment, Ali Curtis hasn't shown a damn thing. Ali Curtis hasn't shown one single good thing right now that he is the proper pick to be the sporting director of this club. The magic of Michael Petke to bring a supporter shield in 2013, a hell of a playoff run in 2014, and when the new person comes in, he decides to throw out the man that has the magic touch. Bruce Arena couldn't do it, even though he was unceremoniously sacked. Bob Bradley, with all of his successes in Chicago, couldn't do it. Juan Carlos Osorio, after getting to the MLS Cup final in 2008, fell apart in 2009 and quit because he was embarrassed of the performance of that year. Coach after coach, after their successes somewhere else to their successes at another club, nothing. World Cup managers of national teams couldn't do a damn thing. Mike Petke, one of our own. And if you listened to the Seeing Red show with Mark Fishkin and Dave Martinez, cried, choked up because of the love that was shown. And while Mike Petke was treated like crap by Ali Curtis, he still took the high ground. He showed why he is who he is, why he still loves this club no matter what happened to him being kicked out. You know, when Mike Petke was named head coach in the offseason of 2013, during getting ready for the preseason schedule, I said to myself, you know what? Why not? I don't know if he'll be successful in his first season, but you know what? I think that Mike Petke can do the job. because he knows the area. He knows what he wants. I didn't expect him to get silverware in 2013. But he did. Because it's a real New Yorker managing a real New York club. 2014, I'll admit it, sophomore slump in the regular season. But once again, he tinkered. He tinkered and he made a formation that he felt suited the team, and he used it all the way into the playoffs. Granted, one and done in the Open Cup, out in the group stage of the CONCACAF Champions League in the third of four games, but he saved his season by going forward, changing things up, and got this club closer since 2008. Got them into the Eastern Conference Finals for the second time in club history, third conference finals in club history. And even though they were one away goal short of punching their ticket to the MLS Cup final, the truth is this. Michael Pecky has done more in his short tenure than all those names combined for the past 19 years. This is the 20th season. And let me just say this for everyone. I'm not happy about this either. I am just as mad, just as angry, and still in shock that Ali Curtis had to equalize the stupidity of this move. Don't blame the players. They had no idea what was going on. They had no idea what this man was thinking. But if you feel like you want to support this club still but not go to the stadium, I understand. You want to watch the games at home? I understand. Understand where you guys are coming from. I understand if you feel that you don't have the heart to go to the stadium. But always remember this. Support the players. Support the people that are trying to make the club great. Once again, this is not Jesse Marsh's fault. This is all on Ali Curtis. And I'm telling you right now. The only way thing gets forgiven is if they win a trophy. An Open Cup, a Supporter Shield. Because if you get a Supporter Shield, you match what Pecky did year one. If you go to MLS Cup and win it, fine. Then it trumps it. You get an Open Cup title as well, that also gets trumped. If you can try and get two titles in one year, like what Seattle just did with their double to finish off 2014, that's fine as well. But I'm telling you guys right now, whatever you want to do, more than welcome to your opinions. Do whatever you want, because you know what? You got free reign. It's up to you what you want to do. So let's see what's going to happen in this super draft this coming Friday. Let's also see what this offseason is going to bring, training camp, this 2015 season, because right now it still hurts. It hurts big time. Thanking my guests tonight, as always, Robert Hay, Earl Reed. Thanks to Nathan Carr and Chad Hollingsworth. Nathan Carr will be with us next Tuesday to give an update on this under-20 CONCACAF tournament. My name is Daniel Feuerstein. Happy New Year once again, everyone. Please join me again next Tuesday. We'll have some great guests, as always, here on the Feuerstein's Fire American Soccer Show. As always, please, please enjoy your football. Thank you. Have a good night. Once again, Happy New Year. And I'll talk to you guys next week. Bye-bye for now.